Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I can tell you truthfully, I haven't enjoyed a program like this as much. It's been so enjoyable having Don on. And the other program I enjoyed equally well was the one he was on last time, about 3 weeks ago, with Warren Balog. But it's just immensely enjoyable. And we're getting in the nuts and bolts of things that the way to take this country back. I mean, if we could. I mean, if there's a peaceful way. I'm just going to go back to what Don said on the last program. You can forget running for a United States senator, especially senator, and even a United States congressman. It costs, I mean, millions. I think it was either Don or Warren said, I'm just pulling a figure close out. For instance, Donald Trump had something like 65 million. You probably know about that. How many billionaires in Harris had more than that. Do you remember those figures? Can you get close to those figures, Don? The billionaires that had behind them?
I don't remember exactly, but I would say, I'm not going to say don't run for Congress or U.S. Senate, but as far as a third party, I wouldn't think any bigger than the state you live in.
Yeah,
ideally, even the county or, you know, just a section of a state. At this time, you know, build something up locally. That's the way to do it. It has to be from the bottom up. You cannot start a third party from the top down right now. It's just, in my opinion, it's impossible. And can I say something real quick, Eddie?
Oh, sure. This is your show, Park. Okay. You're doing me a favor.
Okay, because I've said quite a bit negative about Willis Cardo, and because I had to give the honest story about what happened, you know, the good and the bad of the Populist Party. That he played a central figure in its downfall. But I do want to say that the spotlight eventually became known as American Free Press. It sort of morphed into American Free Press. And once Cardo passed, I had a great relationship with American Free Press. So I don't want – there's probably people listening right now who get American Free Press. I don't want them to think that I think negatively of American Free Press. I don't. There's some good people there. And, you know, Cardo passed, and I called them. A couple of people said, yeah, go ahead, call them. And talk to Paul. Paul Angel, and he said, hey, we won't grudges or this, this, and this. I mean, they were running ads for my newspaper, the Freedom Times, and I was running ads for them. I mean, we had a great relationship. So I just want to make that clear. My problem was with Willis Cardo. It wasn't with the publication, per se.
We, in fact, I get the, I don't know who it is, but somebody has sends me a subscription. I wish whoever is sending me the subscription would let me know, because I'd like to thank them. But I get that. And I also get the, oh, golly, this the Barnes Review. I don't, and somebody sends me that. Yeah. But
well, you know how tough it is, though? I said 1981, the subscription of the Spotlight was $350,000. American Free Press is about the last patriotic publication still in print. And the last I saw a year or two ago, they were down to about $5,000 from $350,000. So that just shows you how tough the environment is. And That's one reason I couldn't keep mine going after 38 years. I mean, I did the best I could, but it's just it's almost impossible right now without substantial financial backing from somewhere.
Yes. So they've been about 5,000, you say, now, Don?
Last I saw it, because once a year, second publications go out second class, have to publish a little thing that they file with the post office. And the last I saw, they were down to about 5,000 from 350,000. So, and it's not because, you know, they screwed things up. American Free Press is a good publication, has a lot of good material in it, but it's just print publications are dying out, and without financial guardian angels, they can't. You know, that's why mine went under eventually. I don't know how long American Free Press will go on. I don't know.
You know, it's so sad that our own people don't support us more, or the people that we fight for. But but they're probably the same.
Can I tell you one little story, Eddie?
Please do.
Okay, to show you, because, and again, I'm not putting anyone down, because I know there's some great, generous supporters out there. You know, I know every time I asked, there were people that always came through, and that's one reason I eventually shut down, because I knew there was, it was impossible to grow. There was no chance of it growing, and I couldn't, in good conscience, keep asking people for money, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to turn things around. But in the year 2005, there was a woman who was a subscriber, and a very reclusive person, and she'd call me every now and then. Wouldn't give her name, but she'd say how much she loved. It was then called the Nationalist Times. She goes, "Oh, my favorite publication. I can't wait to get it." I read it front to back and then front to back again. And about this time, a few years leading up to that, I was getting an anonymous donation once a year of about $10,000. And I finally put two and two together, and I realized it was this woman who was calling me every once in a while, raving about the paper, but not giving me her name. But I did a little detective work on the internet and whatever, and I came to realize who it was. And she died in 2005, and I don't know I know there might be some hostile people listening here, but anyway, she had a sibling. She had a husband who had committed suicide. He was a political figure in Western Pennsylvania, and in her opinion, he was driven to suicide. He was persecuted by the establishment. He was a district attorney or something. She had no children, no close relatives. Okay, but it turns out I read in the paper she died of cancer in early 2005. 6 months later, I see another article in the paper about her estate. You know how much money she left was in her estate? $800 million.
My God.
$800 million. She was an heir to one of the old family fortunes in this country. And it was just her and a sibling. Her and a sibling divvied it up, $800 million apiece. That's what she had. And now I wrote this in a letter to my people, my supporters. If she'd even given 1% of that to the movement or to what I would, to the paper that she claimed to love so much, that's $8 million. She'd given one thousandth of her estate.
My God.
That's still $800,000. But you know where it all went? It all went to not a conservative group or conservative, it went to a conservation organizations. People keeping flowers looking pretty, that kind of thing. It all went to that. $800 million.
God, I was thinking, man, you know what? Can you imagine what kind of a radio program and newspaper we could crank out with just a fraction of that money?
Yeah, 1% of it would put us on the map.
I guarantee double DMT you would, man.
Would have put a lot of people on, had full-time employment, doing things that were, plug. That's what I always wanted to do with the Populist Party. And then we started to. We actually, once Carter started attacking us weekly, we had five different paid employees. I mean, we were really growing. But that's what I always looked at. It wasn't about me or anyone else. You find good people and plug them in, hopefully pay them at what they're best at. This person's good at this. Let's pay them to do that. This person's good at that. Pay them to do that. That's how you grow a movement. It's not all about one person and that person's ego.
That's always been my philosophy with Blood River. I said, I know I'm not the sharpest knife in the rack. I don't have to be, thank God, because I just get the best people I possibly can. And that's what I've tried to do. But speaking with the best people I possibly can, I've kind of neglected getting up Paul Frum. We have Paul Frum owned. We were a little bit late getting him. It's my fault. But anyway, he's owned now. And you know what, Don? On our show notes, you and Paul, I put in there, I couldn't think of a better match. I knew I was going to get somebody out. And we always have a kind of like a life preserver, a parachute in case the host has to leave for some reason. I thought, if Don couldn't show up, and also, I would think Paul is a perfect match. Y'all have a lot in common. Now, Paul hasn't done newspapers, but he's to publish things. For instance, I've got a book that right here to my left. In fact, my left hand is touched. The Canadian series, number 50, is called The Cult of Clergy. He's done that. The Plan Replacement of European People. He's been a publisher. Paul has been a giant warrior in the movement since... Paul, I guess since the late 60s. But anyway, Paul, how are you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. I'd be doing better if we didn't have some snow up here. But otherwise, yeah, I'm doing okay. And, yeah, I still publish two monthly newsletters. One is the Free Speech Monitor on free speech, and the other is the Canadian Immigration Hotline on the immigration invasion.
Well, I know you're very prolific, and it's right. I put the show notes, and I really mean it. I couldn't, in thinking of somebody else to get on, I couldn't think of a better match than you and Dom. Y'all have a lot in common. You're both really, and I'm saying this in a positive way, intellectuals. I know I was telling Don earlier that you graduated valedictorian from high school class, and you were into the movement even back then. And but anyway, we've been talking about. We're getting ready to go to a break in a minute, but we've been talking about for something I'm fascinated with, if the Populist Party it had changed the names, I think, a couple of times. And the newspapers, you've both published things. Don has been involved in several newspapers. One, I think he said he kept going for 38 years. But anyway.
I remember Paul.
Yeah. How you doing, Paul? I haven't talked to you for a long time. How are you?
Pretty good, Don. Are you still in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, still here. I shut down my operation about a year ago. Just ran out of money, unfortunately, but I'm still here. Going to be starting something new soon, actually.
We got a quick break. I hear the music. This is the first break of the third hour. We'll be right back, people. Don't go anywhere because we're going to continue a great, great program. I'm enjoying it so much. It's just coffee, whatever. It's going to be a short break. Be right back in a few minutes.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'm enjoying this show immensely. I really am. I'm not exactly so sure where to go. So I think what we do, and I'm the least talented one on the show tonight. But Paul, why don't you tell us if you knew more about the Institute for Historical Review and things like that? Well, I'm not surprised you did. Tell us a little bit about what you know. But since Don was involved, in fact, he wasn't just involved, he was a founding member of the Populist Party, and he's been a publisher like you. And you were telling us about during the break about what went on with the Institute of Historical Review and Weber and people like that. But go ahead, Paul.
I'm not as knowledgeable about the intrigues within the Populist Party that eventually, I guess, kind of brought it down, but I am fairly familiar with the Institute for Historical Review, which was created by Willis Cardo to publish revisionist magazine and material and to hold conferences and so on. Well, along the way, the people he asked to run it for him, Mark Weber and several others, had a falling out with him. And I know people on both sides, so I just want to describe it as objectively as possible, but at one point it led to the police being called, lawsuits, and eventually a series of lawsuits, because what they were fighting over was a bequest in the will of, I believe she was a niece of Thomas Edison, but it was a bequest in the amount of I think, about $13 million. And this is over 30 years ago when $13 Damn. Million dollars was probably $25 million today. Anyway,
oh, more than that.
Time went on, court cases back and forth. In the end, Willis Carter lost his house and had to shut down the Spotlight. That was his weekly newspaper. Eventually, it got reborn as the American Free Press. But the financial damage was incredible. And they and collected, and though quarrel, basically blew through the $13 million bequest. And I know one of the people who tried to be a mediator and said, look, the money was left for the cause.
Yes.
Your quarrel is just giving it to lawyers, most of whom I suspect were not born in County Tipperary.
You got that right.
And in the end, it was almost all blown away. And the money that could have been used by one person or another, one faction or another, to put out a lot of good material, hold great conferences, etc., basically went into legal fees. It was a heartbreaker. The Institute for Historical Review is still in existence and does good work on a limited basis. And Willis Carter, of course, is dead, but his Orange Review is a great magazine. But they no longer have the energy to put on the conferences they used to. Those conferences that were fantastic, it brought people not just from all over North America, but from all over the world. It's tragic. It's like a marriage with two people are good people, but they somehow begin to quarrel, and in the end, all there is bitterness, and the family savings have all gone to shyster lawyers. I'm not in a very lawyer-friendly mood this week.
We have a lawyer on our show.
Former, inactive lawyer.
Oh.
And I was not directly involved in all that, what Paul was just talking about, but I was sort of indirectly because I think just out of, I was under attack like Mark Weber was, and I'm not going to necessarily take sides on that. I think, but I was sent a lot of the legal documents and a lot of inside information that was going back and forth. But I think part of Carter's problem, if he wasn't compromised, is he was too dictatorial. And I think, you know, he hired some very intelligent people there at the IHR, and there was a board of directors, and I think they wanted to have a little influence on how the organization was run, and Carter really wouldn't have any of it. He was very autocratic, and he just wanted people to go along with him. And what my experience was, a lot of times the things he wanted were just kind of strange or, you know, not the best route. And if somebody stood up to him, that sort of was it. You know, once I talked to Revelio Oliver one time about Carter when I was trying to, you know, get solutions, and he said, I'll tell you, once he sinks his teeth into somebody, forget about it. You know, there was no compromise.
And so there was not
gonna, that was never going to be successfully arbitrated, in my opinion, at IHR.
I know a very prominent Southern lawyer tried to arbitrate it, and I too am not taking sides. I know folks on both sides of the thing. It's just that the quarrel was tragic, and mentioned Revel Oliver. I was in correspondence with him, but I never met him. And I got into a lot of trouble. I attended a memorial for Revel Oliver in Illinois. And there's a video done of it, and Dr. David Duke spoke, and a whole lot of others spoke. And the video was of my talk was held up as one of the reasons to fire me. Because I praised Revel Oliver, and I shared the same stage as Dr. David Duke.
That was well before wokeness. That was many years before wokeness.
Oh, yeah. Canada was pioneering wokeness. I laugh about it now, but it wasn't so funny at the time.
Well, did any of y'all know Bradley Dean? I know years and years and years ago, before I even dreamed about having a radio program, I think before I even knew about TPC, and I don't know how I got in touch. I was able to talk to Bradley Smith, I believe it was, and he was with IHR. And I believe he had a radio program. And maybe I'm just dreaming that, but how about Bradley? Wasn't Bradley Smith one of the big contributors to Institute of Historical Review, y'all?
Yeah, he was a revisionist. I met him on a couple of occasions. A really likable guy, very smart, very determined. I believe he retired to maybe retired isn't quite the right word. Went to Mexico because, and isn't this a judgment? There was more free intellectual freedom in Mexico than there was in the United States. I mean,
didn't he have a falling out with Cardo also? Didn't he? The obligatory falling out.
I'm not sure.
You know, one time I did some digging into Cardo's enemies list because, again, I was trying to keep the Populist Party alive, and it was stunning all the different people. I'm not asking you, Paul, to take sides or say anything negative, but I'm just going from my own experience with him that it was like one person after another that he turned on, and when he turned on somebody, there was nobody more vicious. I mean, he liked getting down and dirty, and the more lawsuits, the better, but I think Bradley Smith was another one he went after.
Well, one I know much better was, I'm not aware of that aspect of Bradley Smith's story, but Michael Collins Piper. Mike, the only job he ever had was working for Cardo, for the American Free Press,
Liberty Lobby.
Liberty Lobby, and so on. And he did great work, and he was a really affable guy. And he got along with people, and people liked him, and he just churned out books like mad, and they were very popular, and he very well done. So I liked Mike. Every time I would be in Washington, I'd drop in and see him, and we'd go out to lunch and so on. But he had a falling out with Cardo back around 15 or 16.
Yeah, who did?
So
right at the end. At the end.
But I mean, it's not just a falling out. He was in really bad health. The last time I saw him, he was still with Cardo, and we were at a conference, Tex-Mars conference in I think it was in Arizona. No, it was in Texas, I think. Anyway,
Texas is great.
That's where once again I met my great friend Bishop Williamson. The great rebel bishop. But anyway, Cardo was, Mike Piper was in such bad shape. His lips were blue, and he had to be wheeled through the airport. Like, he couldn't walk. He was in really bad health. He gave a great talk. Well, anyway, not long after that, the break was complete. Mike was out as an employee. He was now desperately sick, and apparently didn't seem to have any insurance. And he moved back to, I believe it was Idaho. And
with Mark Glenn.
With Mark Glenn. And then he ended up passing away in a motel room. It just left a bad taste. I mean, he put in so many good years and done so many good things. I never did learn what the falling out was about, but...
seemed to be about Cardo's wife. I would just say that, I mean, that Mike was one of the reasons I got involved in the Populist Party because, he was very affable. I got along with him well, and, I got to meet Willis Cardo through him, who at the time I thought was a great, great man, and he's the main reason I gave up my law career to go full-time into the Populist Party. But then we had a really nasty falling out, too, again. I don't disagree. Mike was a likable guy when he wanted to be, but he could be nasty as can be also.
So Mike, so he
I
was.
Never
you
saw
say,
that side of him.
Go ahead, pardon me. I was just going to ask a question.
Never saw that side of him.
Well, he sat under oath in the civil suit I was talking about earlier that he lied about things about me in the spotlight. I mean, I don't consider him an ethical person, but I'll just drop it there.
Well, folks, with that, I guess we'll. I'll let you go. We're going to the bottom of the hour break, the last hour. This is going to be kind of a long break. I always say that, 4 or 5 minutes. We'll get you some coffee where you need to be. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hi, everyone. If you or someone you know were diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma within the past 20 years, listen up, because you could be entitled to significant cash compensation. For years, the weed killer Roundup was used in homes, farms, and gardens, and now studies have proven a direct link between Roundup and this deadly cancer. So if you or someone you know have been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, call us and find out if you qualify for a cash settlement. 800-842-6060. That's 800-842-6060. Time to file a claim is running out, so don't delay. The call is free, the consultation is free, and you can find out if you qualify for a monetary award. Call 800-842-6060. That's 800-842-6060. 800-842-6060. Call now.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
A new study indicating the green revolution about to leave behind a colossal junk pile.
Solar power, the solar panels, the wind turbine blades, lithium batteries, there's going to be a massive amount of trash, and it's starting in a number of years for all of those items because they only last 10 or 20 years.
That's Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. He adds research now shows a colossal junk pile of very clean energy leftovers may be coming to a neighborhood near you, and it might be there very soon.
Windmill blades are made of fiberglass, not recycled. Lithium batteries, not recycled. Solar PV panels, not recycled. So there's going to be massive piles and landfills of all those supposedly green energy source products.
And he tells the Salem Radio Network those components only have a lifespan of maybe 10 to 20 years. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. A major settlement for an amusement park death.
A jury in Orlando, Florida has awarded $155 million each to the parents of Tyree Sampson. Sampson, who was 6'2" and nearly 400 pounds, fell 70 feet to the ground from Icon Park's Orlando Freefall ride in 2022 after a safety harness was too small to fit him and didn't lock properly. His parents sued Funtime, the Austrian company that manufactured the ride. They also reached a settlement with Icon Park for the death of the 14-year-old school football player. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Man has been sentenced to 22 years in prison for kidnapping a woman from Michael Bloomberg's Colorado ranch. Joseph Beecher sought to kill the former New York City mayor. He couldn't find Bloomberg. Instead, he kidnapped a housekeeper. That woman was later rescued. More on these stories, townhall.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
The Epoch Times. NewYorkTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging out. Hey, I'm having so much fun. I wish we could play what we talk about during the breaks on the air. But listen, the hardest part about having two super talented people on is knowing where to go, because their knowledge is so broad, their experience is so deep. But I wanted to do third party, but we probably not have enough time. We got to do third party. That's my dear love. Even if it takes 2 hours, I want to get into that. I want the young people to know how to do a third party, because unlike a lot of people, I have absolutely zero, minus zero, actually minus below. There's I have a minus 10 faith in the so-called United States government. I don't think it can be reformed. I believe it has to be torn all the way down. It's the same government that came into the South and raped the South in the 1860s. It's the same government that went in and joined with the forces against Germany in the First World War, Second World War. It's the same government that did bombing the hell out of every... I mean, who are we not bombing? I think it's the most evil government. I think that Nero would... they would embarrass him for what they've done. I think Caligula would be embarrassed. But anyway, what our so-called government's done. But anyway, with that, so that's a long rabbit trail. So we won't do third party. We'll have to do that again. We got to do third party sooner or later. I want third party. I'm spoiled. No, but anyway, so let's talk about Trudeau. Go ahead, Paul.
I have a question about sure. Third party. I followed the election in the 2000. Where Pat Buchanan blew it.
Well, he did.
Yeah, I went to Livonia, Michigan, for a church dinner in a Serbian church for Pat, and he was on fire. And I thought, he's finally hitting the immigration issue. This is great. You know, I was really enthusiastic, and then. I think he got sick. He turned the management of his party over to his sister, who is not one of us. I was encouraging my American friends, that I knew in the council or otherwise. I said, listen, phone up your Texas or Michigan, the Buchanan campaign. And many had never actually been involved in campaigns. I said, listen, you can volunteer to hand out leaflets, put up signs, or whatever else they ask you to do. I know one in Texas who called, approached him three times, never even got a return call. And that experience was repeated in several other instances where people who want to volunteer, any election campaign, desperately needs volunteers to get out there and spread the word. And his campaign was just an absolute abomination. And they were it was the best funded third party campaign since George Wallace. And
that was because of Ross Perot. It started the Reform Party, and it actually split apart. But it was substantial enough that Buchanan was able to get matching funds and. 2000 of 12, I think it was $12.6 million, something like that. And I'll tell you what, Paul, you're right on the money, because I actually wrote an editorial about that one time in my paper about that was the big downfall. Buchanan was great. He would show up and make, I met him a few times. I went to various events he was at, and he would show up inevitably with his sister, and he'd give a speech, shake hands, Bay, who was the treasurer of the U.S. at one time. and shake hands, and then split. Now, whether he was, at that time was a Republican or a third party candidate, what he should have done, and I've criticized Trump about this, he's been better at it now, but what you do, you sign everybody up that's there that wants to get involved, and then you know, make those people volunteers for your campaign, or you know, some of them become candidates, some of them become local delegates, poll watchers, hand out literature, whatever. But yeah, I described it as vapor trails. Pat would show up, make a speech, he and his sister would split, and that was it. There was no follow up.
Vapor trail, that's a good, that's a great.
And then another thing, I hate to be terribly critical because I like Pat, but
yeah, me too.
Then during the summer, it came time to for a vice presidential nominee. So there was a lot of pressure to nominate Governor Kirk Fordyce of Mississippi. He was on his way out. He'd served his two terms. He couldn't run again. Well, he had all sorts of pluses. First of all, he was a sitting governor, a man with position and an organization. Secondly, he was well-liked. And there was if the campaign had caught fire, there was a reasonable chance he could have carried Mississippi. And then maybe another southern state, and that really puts the party on the map in a way that had not occurred since Wallace. And, Bay would absolutely not hear of it. So they took this Negro L.A. vice principal. Well, she was I forget her name, but she was a nice old lady. But, I mean,
Angela Davis.
She didn't have the heft of a guy like Kirk Fordyce, who actually had coattails. But they thought that'll get rid of the racist tag. Well, why should you have to get rid of it? And it doesn't do it anyway. They'll still say, or they just call it Uncle Thomasina.
Ezola Foster. Ezola Foster was her name, Paul.
Yeah.
Ezola Foster.
A lot of people just walked away. I mean, this is a joke. Yeah.
About that, though? He had a heart problem that year, too. And I think I guess that's kind of a pun. I think that took the heart out of his will to campaign hard. And I'll tell you what, I looked at the FEC reports for that 2000 campaign, because he got over $12 million in matching funds. And, in my opinion, he could have bought huge chunks of national TV time with that kind of money even back then.
Yeah.
Okay? He didn't. I mean, that money, in my opinion, was just squandered. So
that's too bad.
Definitely questions about that whole campaign.
That's what I gleaned from many people I talked to in the States. Well, how's the Buchanan campaign going? And they say, well, what campaign? Haven't heard a thing. Mm-hmm. And unlike some previous efforts where they were really starved for funds, although, $12 million sounds like peanuts today, seeing the camel blew through a billion. Nonetheless, it would have allowed him to run a credible campaign and make some noise. But didn't.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting, too. That kind of goes back to Carter in the spotlight, too, because I went to Washington and met with a friend of the Populist Party. We went to Buchanan's office in 1991 and talked to him. Didn't say anything about associating with the Populist Party or speaking at a meeting or anything like that. We just, just went down, say hello, and, made ourselves known a little bit. And a few weeks later, I get my spotlight, and on the back page it says, Buchanan shuns Wassel. Don Wassel asked Pat Buchanan to run for president of the Populist Party, and he instantly said no. I mean, this is the kind of crap, spotlight was running. Mike Piper writing all of it, too.
Oh, no. Oh.
That was nice compared to all the stuff they put in, believe me.
Well, we're probably running out of time now, but I would like to ask you gentlemen a question when we come back. We're up against the break. What was George Wallace, that was the first presidential election I was able to vote in. Of course, I voted for George Wallace. What was his secret in getting the support he got? Was it just his message? Was it his contacts? What about that, Don?
Well, he was a sitting governor, and he was a national symbol of resistance to segregation. So, I mean, he had a built-in national following right there. He had a financial base and zealous supporters all through the country, especially the South. And so when he started, when he went third party, American Independent Party, I mean, he was, it's sort of like, you know, it was Buchanan or somebody like Ross Perot had enough name recognition behind him and followers that he could, you know, start something substantial or close to being substantial.
And also he was
name recognition. He had the name recognition in the fall one.
Was that 65 when he ran for president? 66?
68.
Okay. 68. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I may be mistaken then when being able to vote, but I remember he was.
What did he carry, Paul? Five southern states, there, right?
Carried the deep south. And, you know, he was also attracting a fair deal of votes in the north among the white working class that were already feeling abandoned by the country club Republicans and the increasingly radical pro-Negro Democrats. He was, you know, I mean, obviously there were flaws there, but, you know, he was on to a good thing.
Well, that's another topic when we come back from the break. What happened to the Democratic Party? It's totally opposite of what it used to be, so you guys be thinking about that. People, Blood Groove Radio family, we've got to go to our last break. We're coming up on our last segment of the last hour. We'll be right back, folks.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I've enjoyed this program more than I have at any in a long time, I'm telling you. But we don't have a lot of time left, but we're going to ask our two guests, super special guests, during the break, what the hell happened to the Democratic Party? It's not the Democratic Party when I was a teenager. So we're going to go, and we're going to ask, first of all, Don, what the hell happened to the Democratic Party, and why do we keep going to the left? Why can't we go to the right? Why do we always have to go to the left? But go ahead, Don.
Well, so, you know, the old long march through the institutions that Gramsci, that the Italian, wrote about, and which the communists have followed. It's what happened, literally. We've been subverted for several generations now, and we've always been pushed leftward without much resistance. And the so-called acceptable right is only going to, it's not going to accept people like us that talk honestly about race and certain other issues. So when a country keeps moving to the left and the left and the left, I mean, culturally, as far as I'm concerned, the Democrat Party is now the Communist Party. They are communist. They push things now like the grooming of children, which would have caused people to literally, revolt in times past. And That's one of the things that disappoints me, that this has happened on such a scale and Americans even put up with that. I mean, my God, what won't we put up with when even our children are being destroyed like that and encouraged to change their gender and all this stuff like that. But at any rate, culturally, I think we've become communists as represented as the Democrat Party, the spirit of it. And then, of course, in foreign policy, you've got the neocons who are communistic as well, but they push the Wolfowitz doctrine, which is that the U.S. is to dominate the world indefinitely, and any power or combination of powers that tries to oppose will be put down, and that Russia and China are seen as the two potential enemies threatening the world empire of Washington, our great empire, the empire of lies. And so that's, I think, the main reason Russia is hated so much. They're not going to be, I mean, who knows how it's going to turn out. I think we're losing our own empire, and I think that's a good thing. At the very least, we need a multipolar world. But Washington is going to resist that and resist that. They want to have, just as they have a uniparty in this country, they want a unipolar world that they dictate to. And Russia is seen as a threat to that because Putin still, you know, he believes in Russian sovereignty. Russia is doing what's in Russia's best interest, and it's not seen that way. So that's why Russia is viewed the way it is, which seems as irrational and crazy to us, and it probably is. But, you know, you take the two major points there, culturally and foreign policy, you know, you've got, I think, you know, the Democrats, I mean, the left used to be anti-war, pro-peace. Now they're just virulently pro-war. I mean, whatever the Democrat Party says, the left will go along with, you know, no matter, even if it's totally contradictory to what they stood for a few years ago. So, you know, they're lockstep, mindless, useful idiots, but you do have the elites at the top. But I think, you know, next few years will be interesting. Trump, as I said before, you know, I think he almost went, not only was killed, but if he had lost the election, he would go to prison, and they'd do everything maybe to put some of his kids in there too. So he almost has to come through out of self-preservation. So we'll see what happens.
I think that's a great, great breakdown of the question I asked you. You did a masterful job, Don. And we'll go to Paul. Ask Paul. One thing I'd like to interject here. I think one thing, and I've been talking to some other people that are more knowledgeable than myself. One of my best friends in the world, who's an MD, and I told him if he knew as much about money as he did, if he knew as much about medicine as he did money, he would be like Dr. Albert Schweitzer. But he thinks that the money, our financial system, and I was talking to Don earlier. I hope this isn't too big a trail. Well, maybe it was Sam I was talking to that today about a reading. I'm rereading G. Edgar Griffin's great book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And believe it or not, this is going to lead to a point. Our money system, the Federal Reserve we have, the so-called money we use in the United States here in the world, it's the greatest fraud that's ever been put over on people in the whole world. There is no greater fraud than this economic system, which is leading to the point. If you may have heard, I know you guys know about the BRICS nations, and there's some other nations wanting to join it. I hear even Saudi Arabia wants to get in. Well, China and Russia and Brazil, they're wanting to get their own currency to totally dump the United States dollar, and they want to back theirs by gold with the United States dollar. But that may be one way to bring them down, but that's just an aside, a rabbit trail. Paul, I think Don did a great job on the Democratic Party. He said, yeah, I know you're Canadian, but you know about the Democratic Republican Party. Give us your take on it. What the hell happened to him in your view, Paul?
Well, I have the great opportunity, good fortune, to get to know really one of the last great Southern Democrats, and that was Congressman Rarick, who represented the first district of Louisiana from 66 to 74. Yeah, and I was helping him with his autobiography. Unfortunately, things intervened. He died, and that project never came to light. But I got to learn a lot, and the rot was already in there. And I think, you might trace things back to Roosevelt, but one of the real turnarounds was Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson betrayed the South. He forced through his political skills and also the fact that it was being done in the name of the fallen President Kennedy, forced through that civil rights bill.
Great society.
Catastrophic. Yeah, great. The civil rights bill particularly as being catastrophic for whites. It, you know, with affirmative action and so on, it's done so much damage to whites applying for university, whites seeking jobs and so on. And it was there that the, you know, I think the Democratic Party significantly chose sides, and it was against whites. And then along came McGovern and the party convention there, where that was the first following of gay rights and so on, and the Democratic Party and embraced that, and then of course promptly got absolutely stomped by Nixon in the 72 election. But they didn't learn. I mean, they didn't say, oh, well, this is way, this is not where our base is at all. We better get away from that. And you know, it's only gotten worse now, as you were saying earlier, the embrace of transgenderism and it won't be too long, and I predict this and have for a number of years, that the LGBTQ lobby will be arguing for pedophilia on the basis that if the homosexual or lesbian says they love the underage child, and the child says, I love you, well, then who are we to discriminate? You know, love is love is love, and they should have the right, well, it's not just love, it's the right to sex. And yes. I see that coming. I see that law coming. We're just years from, or, you know, months away from it being just perfectly logical, just like, you know, it was 10 years ago, nobody was talking about transgender kids or little boys wanting to be little girls, or, I mean, that was just off the agenda completely. Now it's taken seriously by, certainly by the left.
They call them minor attracted persons now. They don't call them pedophiles anymore, Paul. They said that's already out. What you said is already out there in the U.S. They said they're complaining. You know, they'll say, "I'm not a monster. I'm not a pedophile. I'm a." They control the narrative, the vocabulary so well. They create words on the fly. I'm a minor attracted person. What is that? MAP, a map. And I'll tell you what. Back when I grew up, the graveyards would be filling up. You wouldn't have enough. You'd have to hire new grave diggers. Back in Arkansas in the mountains of Kentucky, that would not fly. That's a great breakdown, you guys. Well, we're up.
Gradualism. That's how it's been done. Gradualism. That's the key to it all.
Yeah.
Mousy Tone said, two
old
steps forward, one step backward.
The old salami tactic, just to take away a little bit of rights or make at a time, and especially if you're an Anglo-Saxon, you don't want to overreact. We're not passionate like Latins, who might very righteously revolt and hang the pervert.
Yes.
We don't want to overreact. We don't want to be extremists. So they take away a little bit of our rights, and then a little bit more, and after a decade, you realize that we're seriously reduced.
You know, I have this.
I think white people put up with anything now. We're to the point where, you know, the whole COVID hoax. I mean, look at that. I mean, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
What people put up with there.
You know, you said that, Don, and that amazes me. You said, is there anything, my God, is there anything in this world that white people, especially white men, will not put up? We won't even defend our own children against this transgender garbage in the public schools. I mean, they're saying that the FBI is monitoring kids, the children, the parents that go to school boards and complain about this transgender crap being put into schools. What the hell are the FBI? You know, the FBI, they bleed just like we do. I mean, are we going to allow? That's right, Don. Is there anything on earth that white people will not put up with? And that we run completely out of time, guys. Guys, I tell you what, man, Don and Paul, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been a delightful, delightful program. I really appreciate it. And I was keeping in touch with y'all. Do the same.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy being on.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed having you on. I really did. You. we've had. I've enjoyed it so much. So good night, Paul. Good night, Don. Thank you so much. Good night, Miss Lizzie.
Good night, Paul. Lizzie.
Take care, John.
We got to get out. Lizzie got to bring TPC on now. Good night, everybody. Good night, Lizzie.